We know there are times where you're just too busy to sort through the mass of information that comes your way. So to make it easier for you to stay informed, subscribe to The Morning Agenda, WITF's news podcast, where the only agenda is you.
Funding for The Spark is provided by Capital Blue Cross, focused on creating a healthier future for our communities through innovations like its Capital Blue Cross Connect Health and Wellness Centers, which provide in-person services and inspire healthy living. Learn more at capitalbluecross.com. The Spark is also supported by UPMC. Choose UPMC for your family's health care needs close to home. Visit upmc.com/centralPA for a complete list of services and locations.
May is Mental Health Awareness Month, but quite frankly, more Americans are probably aware of their mental health, especially since the COVID pandemic. According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, 1 in 5 American adults has experienced a mental health challenge, and 1 in 20 Americans live with a serious mental illness, such as schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, or severe depression. Those statistics may not tell the whole story. There seem to be more people who are suffering from depression and other mental illnesses or experiencing episodes of poor mental health since the pandemic. However, there are barriers to seeking help in the form of therapy or other treatments. One of the biggest is access to trained mental health professionals. There simply aren't enough to keep up with the demand. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro signed a bill earlier this spring that could make more therapists and counselors available. Joining us on The Spark to talk about mental health and access to treatment are Allison Pigeon, Chief Executive Officer, and Valerie McNichol, a licensed clinical social worker and the Chief Operations Officer, both at Move Forward Counseling. Thank you to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right, so let me start off by asking kind of a broad question. In that introduction, I talked about, there seemed to be more people aware of their mental health, maybe experiencing mental health episodes. Are there more people who are experiencing poor mental health? And Allison, let me start with you.
Sure. So I think it's probably a combination. I think the pandemic for so many people was so difficult. And if they were already struggling a little bit, but maybe coping okay, the pandemic was just another humongous layer of stress on top of all of the things that they were already dealing with. And then it really just became apparent that they needed help. And then I also think the pandemic, you know, silver linings was that it just became a lot more normal to talk about mental health. The stigma was less because everybody just went through this very traumatic experience. And so that's the other piece that we've seen as well.
That's interesting you say that, because that was one of the things that often comes up when we talk about mental health and people sometimes hesitant to seek help, is that stigma. You think there's less of a stigma now?
I do, yes. For sure.
So, Valerie, what do you think? I mean, as you're meeting with patients, I don't know whether you still are meeting with clients or not, but same question to you. What are you seeing, or what have you seen in the last 5 years?
Yeah, I think obviously the pandemic has had an impact, but I think we were seeing an increase in mental health needs even prior to the pandemic. So that was just exacerbated that even more so. I don't individually see clients anymore, but I meet with the staff who do. And I'm just coming out of a meeting where staff are expressing that clients seem to be sicker, that the acuity level of some of the clients we're seeing in outpatient seems to be higher, and people seem to be struggling more, even the ones that are, you know, that are coming. I also agree that I think the stigma is less. It's still there and it's still very strong, especially in certain communities. But I think particularly our younger folks, our Gen Z, younger millennial folks, feel much more comfortable talking about mental health and talking about accessing help and support for mental health problems.
Something you just said, though, that the clients seem to be sicker. What do you mean by that?
We're seeing kind of an increased rate of higher risk kinds of behaviors and higher risk symptoms, such as suicidal thinking or self harming behavior like cutting or those types of things. And so it may be that people are feeling more comfortable talking about those kinds of things, but we're seeing just a population that just greater than used to be probably in years past.
Why?
That's a good question. I think there's probably like multiple factors to that. I think some of it is that people are more comfortable talking about it. So some of these folks might have been struggling with some of that in the past and not felt comfortable sharing. I think there are a lack of resources. And so people, you know, there's waiting lists and lots of different mental health programs. So people are having to wait longer to get services or medications that they need. So that could mean their symptoms worsen during that period of time while they're trying to access treatment. I also think it's just a difficult, there's a lot of stuff going on in our world right now that is distressing and increasing some of those symptoms.
Now, I want to see if there's a difference between someone who has been diagnosed or who is suffering from mental illness, but there are a lot of us who have had episodes of poor mental health. So what is the difference? And when you say that there are people who are sicker, are you talking about those who have been diagnosed or those who are suffering from mental illness?
I think both. What is the difference is a mental illness is a diagnosable condition when it causes difficulties in functioning in other areas of your life. So we all have days or times when we might feel the feeling of depression, but depression becomes a diagnosable condition when it causes problems in your family or with other relationships, with work, with your health, those types of things. So when it interferes with other parts of your life. And there are lots of people who have a mental illness in one distinct episode. So for example, depression, there's lots of people who go through a period of depression and then it resolves and they never go through a period of depression again. And then there are some people who have things like depression that are recurrent, that they will frequently have recurring episodes of depression throughout their lifetime. I don't know for a fact, but my suspicion is that it's more the worsening of the conditions, that not necessarily people are having more episodes, where they used to only have one episode and now we're having multiple. I think it's the worsening of those conditions.
Allison, Valerie said that even before the pandemic, that I don't know if it meant you were seeing more clients or that there were people who were more aware or having these episodes of poor mental health or coming for treatment for mental illness. But do we know why even before the pandemic? I know I'm asking some questions that I could be looking for the history of the timeline of what we're talking about here. But do we know why even before the pandemic there seemed to be a worsening?
Yeah, I think there was always a huge demand. I've worked in mental health for almost 20 years now, and there's always been, you know, lots and lots of clients that need to be treated. And I think that, like any major problem, there's a lot of factors that go into it. One is I think our society doesn't really do a lot of good things for our mental health in general. Another one is, you know, our healthcare system isn't set up well to handle people's mental health issues, much less do anything in regards to prevention. There's almost nothing that exists in regards to prevention. So the stigma, I think there's a lot of different like cultures and communities where it's like, well, we don't go talk to somebody, like you just deal with this in your family. And then obviously people aren't getting better. So lots of different reasons.
You know, I keep asking, I feel like that young person who keep continuously ask why, but maybe if more people did ask why, we'd have some answers and solutions. But You said earlier that stigma, the stigma seems to be lessened. And I assume you're talking about in individuals and maybe as a society. But if policymakers, if others that control the purse strings don't realize the mental health. And I don't know whether to go as far as say we have a crisis or not. I think sometimes the word crisis is overused, but Allison, I see you nodding your head that you would call it a crisis?
Yes, especially since the pandemic.
Okay. So a mental health crisis, why isn't it recognized then?
Yeah, I think it's starting to become more recognized, which is great. And, you know, one of the things that we have seen is some legislation that's been passed to help people access more services. Insurance companies seem to be paying a little bit more attention to mental health in terms of reimbursement rates, things like that. But I think there's still a long way to go. And, you know, often we talk about the system being broken. It definitely is. There's lots of things that need to be improved.
Valerie, did you want to jump in there?
No, I was just going to, in relationship to the question why, I think some of it has to do with our society being very like disconnected with one another. I mean, I think about like the, you know, people used to know their neighbors and used to, you know, have lots of different connections that we don't have as much now, you know, especially in the specifically speaking about the United States, but we don't have the same connections with people that we used to. And I think that plays a large role in the decline in mental health.
Mm. You know, there are so many things have changed. Social media, for one. Just one that I've thought about as a child growing up, everyone used to sit on their front porches and know your neighbors as you're walking by. Then we started building decks in the back of the house where we didn't see our neighbors quite as much. I'm not blaming that, but just saying that, you know, things have changed over the years. So access is a barrier to getting treatment for mental health. So Allison Pidgeon, why? What are some of the factors that are keeping people from getting the treatment they need?
Yeah, there's been a shortage in the mental health field for a long time. So if you look at sort of the cost of getting an advanced degree, you need to either a master's degree or a PhD to become a therapist. And obviously that's a very expensive and time-consuming proposition. And then you come out of school making very little money. And so I think that, you know, it just doesn't make financial sense for people to go to school to become a therapist. You know, you don't want to spend $100,000 on a graduate degree and come out making $40,000 a year. So I really think that the answer is for insurance reimbursement rates to increase to pay therapists to at the level of other, you know, master and PhD level professionals in the healthcare field.
What you just said, again, seems to go back to what you said earlier, that we don't value mental health as much when you're talking about an education costing that much and then the salaries that are paid as you're coming out of school. Seems to say that we don't value that as much.
Correct. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Valerie, you're nodding your head too.
That's definitely the message it sends.
So there has been some changes here in Pennsylvania. Governor Shapiro signed a bill in March that created a new licensure category, allowing individuals to practice as licensed associate marriage and family therapist and licensed associate professional counselors. The idea is to expand access to mental health services and addresses the need for more practitioners. Under the new law, individuals with the required educational qualifications but who have not completed the necessary supervised clinical experience can obtain an associate license. This enables them to provide mental health support and qualify for insurance reimbursement while under the guidance of a licensed supervisor. So, Allison, what does all that mean?
Yeah, so this is huge for Pennsylvania in terms of having a whole new pool of people who now have an associate level license and can hopefully bill insurance, although that remains to be seen. So essentially, when you get your degree, you come out of school. If you're going to become a therapist, you come out of school and you get your master's degree in social work, or you get your master's degree in counseling. The social workers were able to become licensed social workers. So that was their version of their provisional license. There was no provisional license for the people who were getting their master's in psychology. So they had to work for 2 years, totally unlicensed. They weren't able to bill insurance. It was, as an employer, it was difficult for me to employ them, because that means that we had to basically ask people to pay out of pocket to see that person, which is obviously another barrier to treatment. So there weren't a lot of opportunities for those folks. They also ended up in jobs where they weren't paid very well. And so now our hope is that they have this associate level license and they'll be able to bill insurance just like the licensed social workers do.
So you called this big. How big?
It's huge. Yeah, I think it could potentially, I know in our business, it could potentially transform our business in terms of our challenge is always hiring therapists. We don't have trouble finding clients. It's always finding the therapist is a it's const something we're constantly hiring. And so the fact that we can have a whole nother pool of people who we have, more seasoned clinicians to oversee them already. So it's very easy for us to add them in, and then they can bill insurance, and then the clients can more easily access care because they're using their insurance to cover for part of the cost.
Move Forward Counseling, you have multiple offices and locations, right?
We do. We have 7 offices and we have a total of 71 employees.
If you could look into a crystal ball, how many employees do you see? Or, I mean, will you add employees, or you just have employees who will be licensed to be able to provide therapy or counseling to clients?
We will definitely add employees.
So let me ask you, Valerie, if you have seen an impact from this yet. Like I said, this is only about 2 months old that Governor Shapiro signed this bill. Have you seen an impact yet?
We've seen a lot of talking about it. There's a lot of discussion about, how it's going to roll out, which is good. We haven't seen the impact really yet, though. So people have started to receive the provisional license, but the insurance companies have not caught up at this point in terms of how they're going to credential and then pay for those LAPCs and LAMFTs. So that piece really has to happen before it impacts our ability to be able to hire those folks.
Allison, not to put you on the spot or anything, but when someone calls for an appointment, how long before someone will see them?
Yeah, we could see a client within a couple of days. We have been very proactive with hiring. I would say over the past several years, just to try to keep up with demand. And so we have not had a waiting list because we've just been constantly expanding. But our situation is pretty unique. I would say most places there is a waiting list.
Well, see, I was going to bring that point up because I have heard stories of people who maybe were in a crisis situation. They call for an appointment somewhere, and there's a waiting list of 3 months, 6 months. And quite frankly, that sounds frightening to me when we're talking about someone's mental health, and a lot can happen between 3 and 6 months.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's where I think that, there's so much we can do to make the system better so that people don't have to wait that long. Because when you finally get to the point where you're calling for an appointment, you need that help now.
Are hospital emergency rooms equipped to handle a mental health emergency? And I'll put this one to you, Valerie.
I really think it depends on the hospital. There are a lot of hospital systems that have crisis unit staff as a part of the ER, or have behavioral health hospitals that specifically have their own ER. But a lot of our ER systems are not equipped, that they don't have maybe a psychiatrist that's specifically on staff. And a lot of the folks, because there's such a shortage of services, end up spending a long time in the ER before they're either admitted or hooked up with an outpatient provider.
Well, hopefully this legislation will help the situation and make mental health treatment more accessible to Pennsylvanians. We only have about a minute left. I want to thank both of you for being on the program. You know, I don't want to leave without leaving some practical advice for listeners out there. Allison, if someone is experiencing some bad mental health right now, what do you advise them to do?
Yeah, I would say definitely reach out for help. It's something that, you know, it's not going to hurt. It's only going to help, hopefully. And so I think that, you know, people really do experience really positive changes in their life as a result of therapy. So I would just say, you know, don't be afraid to reach out for help.
I want to thank both of you for being with us today. Allison Pidgeon is the Chief Executive Officer and Valerie McNichol is the licensed clinical social worker. I should say a licensed clinical social worker and the chief operations officer, both with Move Forward Counseling. Thank you for being with us today and the work that you do.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.